Peter R. Bregan, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour.
Hello, 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 hello. Again, it's Wednesday, and I get to talk with my guests out in the audience because you can call in. And remember, you may be listening to this, and most likely will be listening to this, not live, but on our great archive, which you can get to from my website, bregan.com. And you can listen live at prn.fm, www.prnfm. And remember, wonderful audience, remember, you can call in. Sometimes you forget. You can call in, but that's to get on the show and talk with me, not to listen to the show. To listen to the show, it's prn.fm. Call in. You call in today. We're going to have so many interesting topics for you to join in on. 888-874-4888. And this is September 19th, 2018. So if you're listening today and it's September 19th, 2018, it's live and you can call it. Remember, we have a dedicated email. I read it all the time. It gives me help and direction from you. You can get in touch with me at BreganLive, BreganLive@hotmail.com. You always wanted to send me a message, send it to BreganLive@hotmail.com. It'll get a really direct look from me, unlike our other public emails, which go through assistants. BreganLive@hotmail.com. Isn't that a great title? BreganLive@hotmail.com. And don't forget, we've put up breaking news. Now, I haven't been using that much on the radio because we have so much stuff to talk about, but we're putting up a daily breaking news. You can keep track of things that me and my assistant and my wife, Ginger, think are valuable. So it's news that's going to be about psychiatry and what's the matter with it, sure, but it's also going to be about love and alternatives and caring. And remember, we have a searchable archive for the show on Bregan.com. So we're really up and going. And let me tell you, I'm just putting the finishing touches on my own studio room, where I will not only be doing a radio show from, I think it'll sound a little better than it does from my office. I'm going to be doing videos, a lot of videos again. And I'm going to be doing a regular TV show. I haven't figured out just how I'm going to do it, probably on YouTube, where I'll be coming on at an hour that you all can anticipate or will be announced on frequent alerts, because don't forget, best way to stay in touch with me is to sign up free for frequent alerts at Bregan.com. But I'm going to be set up so that I can actually interview people on video. I can call Peter Getze, who's leading such a struggle in Europe against the pharmaceutical establishment, that they're trying to get him out of the organization he founded. The international organization that he founded to monitor medical science, the Cochrane, they're trying to get him out of that. And I'll be able to call him, and you'll see him, and I'll see him on a video screen. It's going to be interactive live TV. I'm really, really moving along here, folks. I got so old, I decided to get new again and young again. So I'm just bombing along. By the way, I'm just standing around thinking to myself, what a blessing. What a blessing. I'm 82 years old, and I worked the last 3 days like 10 hours a day on legal cases, on a new book. I have a wonderful new agent, wonderful new book. So listen, look forward to a good life, folks. Look forward with me to a wonderful, wonderful, good life. Now, talking about a wonderful new life, good life. A big part of my new life is Pam Popper. You've met her before. You can listen to her other shows, earlier shows with Pam. Pam, are you there?
I am here. I'm with you.
Oh, my God. You're so loud and clear.
Well,
Pam,
good.
Pam, you can meet Pam if you're in the club. Well, actually, Pam, they could even meet me this weekend if they're in the Columbus area, couldn't they?
Yes, absolutely. Well, we're kind of full for dinner. You're a big draw, so we're like oversubscribed for dinner. We're going to have people eating in the parking lot, watching you on remote view or something. But for
but
the rest of
the weekend,
if they wanted
to come to a filming where I'm talking about how to help people.
Well,
they
need to call and register because there's food involved. So we have to know how many people were having lunch and dinner.
Okay, well, I'm going to be in Columbus, folks. Tomorrow, but when could folks, if they're in that area, when could they stop in and join one of our seminars? How would they go about doing that? You want to give them a phone number or something?
Yeah, that would be good. They could call our office at 614-841-7700.
Okay, let's remember to give that out again in a few minutes. People can go get a pencil or a pen or something, or get out their phones and put that number in. So what I'm going to be doing, and Pam is going to give you a number where you can find out when it's going on, I'm going to be filming with Pam two different courses. One, a short course on how to withdraw from psychiatric drugs, and another one that is going to be part of a whole new, it's almost like a mission for me. It's something I've wanted to do since I was 18 years old, working in the state mental hospitals as a volunteer at Harvard. It's going to be about the heart of being helpful. How do people help each other? And I've kind of thrown the gauntlet down, and I've said to myself, and I finally come to grips with it, you don't have to have a license to help somebody. Since when? We've been around for millions of years as little creatures, then bigger creatures, and then a few hundred thousand years as Homo sapiens, and we have helped each other. We didn't hear somebody who was in deep, disturbed distress and see them in our cave or our hut or out in our field and say, well, I'm sorry, we got to call a witch doctor for you. We don't deal with people who are really upset. No, we helped our family. We helped our extended family. We related to each other. So I'm going to be providing a course that will be available in January. And it's going to be on the heart of being helpful. And I'm going to tell you more than your average psychiatrist ever dreamed of knowing about how to relate to yourself and to other people, to family members, whether you're sad or depressed or anxious or hallucinating or having delusions, because you have the right to relate to the people you care about. And if you're a professional person, then you can use it in some license setting. But it's time to stop the fakery about, oh, well, you know, you gotta be a psychiatrist to understand this. That actually, if you're a psychiatrist, you understand zilch nowadays. Grandma, my mother-in-law knows far more about human nature than your average psychiatrist. And she's thriving at 91 years old. So I've just come out and said, you know, that's it. I'm going to start teaching people how to help other people. And no, you're not going to be giving drugs, but that's great. And no, you're not going to be hanging out some license saying, I'm a licensed this or that. No. But you'll know better how to help people. If you have a license, you can use it there. Am I expressing that well enough, Pam?
Yes, I think that's exactly it. And you know, it's interesting because I think that if you look at all aspects of health right now, there are definitely things where situations and conditions where people need very, very specialized attention from highly skilled people. But in my field, we're talking about biological illnesses in my field, some of the people who are helping the most are people who are teaching people how to cook healthy meals. They don't need a doctor. They need a cook, you know. And you, in the case of people who have psychological issues, they need a friendly listening ear and somebody who just cares. I think that caring is the best type of therapy we can give people.
Oh, there's just no doubt about that. That's the God, how do you say it? Sine qua non? I haven't said that in a decade or two. That's without which you just can't do it. You can start with caring. But caring is something you have to be able to learn to do at times, because under stress, when we're being maybe criticized by a loved one, we tend to lose our caring. And I'm going to be just talking about all that stuff and how do you, hang in there in conflict and remind yourself you're loved and you love the other person. And let me say now, I just leaped into talking to my much-loved friend, Pam Popper, without telling you a word about her. And, of course, she's been on the show a number of times, but you may not know a word about her. She's a nutritionist. She's got a PhD in nutrition. She originally got a naturopathic degree, so she's a physician, could get a license in some states, not in others. And she decided that naturopathy was kind of like a fake medicine with more fads in it than general medicine or something like that. And what she's become is just this amazing, one of the top nutritionists in the country. Ginger found you on a list of top nutritionists in the country. You're certainly my top nutritionist. You have taken 35 pounds off me, gotten rid of my hypertension, gotten rid of my asthma. You've gotten rid of Ginger's gastrointestinal issues, literally ulcerative colitis and her asthma issues. And you've done it with a basic plant-based whole food diet in the scientific tradition of the China study. And I don't want to get too much into that right now. I want to be talking about that this weekend you can come and visit in Pam's place. No charge for it, I guess. You charge them for the food, I hope, but you can join in a seminar where I'll be filming and provide some interesting activity in that seminar. Ask me questions, relate, give me an opportunity to talk about people and their issues on any level or family members on any level. We'll be filming, won't be live, so it can be edited out. And if there's something you've said you don't want, it doesn't have to go in the video. And we'll be talking about how to come off psychiatric drugs. Now, we already have out, so Pam, and you can get Pam online, just Pam Popper, and the organization she runs, which is fabulous, is the Wellness Forum Health, and Wellness Forum Health, but you'll see it, you look up Pam Popper. And we're just doing a lot of stuff together. So, maybe we'll see you in Columbus this weekend. That'd be amazing. Give that phone number again, Pam, would you?
Yes, it's 614-841-7700.
Okay, I'm going to write it right down here, too, so I can say it. So say it again, folks.
It's 614-841-7700.
Now, if they wanted to find out, how can they stay in touch with you and learn about when these courses are come out in January, or learn about signing up for the November, 8, 9, and 10 conference where I'll be at, also in Columbus. There's going to be a lot of nutritional stuff, a lot of medical stuff, and there's going to be psychiatric stuff for me, of course. I co-sponsor the conference, which means I get to have a wonderful time, and Pam does all the work and pays for it. And she gives me the right to say co-sponsor, so I can feel better when I'm there and participate and stuff like that. Can they call that number too, 614-841-7700, and find out about that too?
Yeah, or they can email me at pampopper@msn.com, and I can send flyers and catalogs, course catalogs, and detailed information that way also.
See, Pam doesn't sleep. So she'll actually make herself much more available than me. I mean, you're amazing. So give us that one more time, Pam.
pampopper@msn.com.
And well, we've got a lot of different directions we can go in. We're talking about this coming weekend in Columbus when I'll be filming two courses. We're talking, and would love live audience, though God knows I'm sure you're going to have a pack of people there already. We're talking about the conference in November that I'll be speaking at. We'll have really good people you can talk more about, November 8th, 9th, and 10th. We're talking about two courses that will be coming out. And then, of course, we have already been created a much deeper, intensive course called How and Why to Stop Taking Psychiatric Drugs. And that's a live online course We have a wonderful young psychiatrist who's been on the air with me and will be on again before we get doing a lot of stuff. And this is a course where you actually are going to see dozens of videos from me made for the course. You're going to see videos with Pam on nutrition, although the focus is on the psychiatric aspects. You'll see me interacting with people who are having distress and having anxieties, and how I help them, how I go about helping them with all my might as best I can. And then Pinar Miski, whom you've heard on the show before, and who will be on October 3rd, the young psychiatrist that Pam found at a nutritional conference. And she actually does the course online live with you. And guess who's going to visit the online course? Me. I'll come on a few times. And this is intensive, and I like to tell people this one is expensive. It's a big deal course, and you'll just learn what I have to teach, really, and what Pam has to teach. And are we given certificates for that or anything, Pam? What's the latest thinking on that?
Well, it is a certificate course, and it's offered through our school. What a lot of people may not realize is that we have a school here, so we actually do education that meets state and federal standards, and that's one of the reasons why it's a little bit more expensive than a lot of stuff. It's live instruction, and so people earn a certificate, and one of the things that we're going to do that I really
now we're
like,
talking about the big course, the
right,
not the ones
right,
we're filming this and selling in January, but the course we've already tried once and had a good run on. Go ahead.
That's okay. So that one's offered through the school, and one of the things that we're going to do a little bit differently, and Dr. Miski and Kylia and I have been talking about it, the other instructor involved in the course besides you and I, we're going to create some materials that will be usable by the people who take the course. So in other words, some slide sets and educational materials that people can use in their practice. So it'll sort of be a turnkey thing. You go through the course and all the stuff, you complete your assignments, and then we give you stuff that will help you to educate people about this in practice. And we're pretty good at putting those types of things together. Our programs are really, really solid. We've been doing it for so long that I have a lot of confidence in our ability to put together slide sets and materials. So it takes about 20 weeks to complete the course, and we set the dates now, so the course catalog is up to date with the dates of the classes, and very excited to be offering this again.
And Pam, they can actually call you and talk to you about the course. I mean, this is amazing.
Yeah, send an email.
And that contact information is also on Bregan.com, where I have a banner about the work with the courses we're doing. But and is that the same number?
Same number. And if people send me an email, I always set up a time to talk so we don't play phone tag, because that's so aggravating. Because I'm always either doing an interview, or I'm helping people with their health, or I'm teaching a class, or I'm teaching yoga, or I'm writing a book or something. So I have plenty of time to talk to people, but if we set up a time, we won't frustrate each other trying to make a connection.
That's Pam Popper at MSN.com.
Yes, that's it.
That's it. Okay. And again, all of this is on the website, especially the contact information for Pam, because she really is out front and ready to help people find their way through her website or find their way through to one of the courses. And I can't tell you, my wonderful audience, how wonderful Pam Popper is. I mean, when she learned that one of my big unfulfilled ambitions was to develop a course on how to withdraw from psychiatric drugs, she developed, basically doing the work of developing it from reading my books. Can you imagine that? She read my books and developed this course. And I did the videos, and then we have Pinar Miski, Dr. Miski, who's going to have weeks of time for you if you take the course, and you get a certificate that says you've taken this course. I mean, it's amazing. And then I said, Pam, but I want something that's a little less expensive, a little simpler, where where people can just get a good short course on how to withdraw from psychiatric drugs. And Pam said, okay, fly on up. Here's when I'm available. We worked it out. Fly on, we'll create it. And I said, but you know, Pam, what I really, 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 really want to do is finally just start teaching people how to help one another, how to help each other. Let's forget about licensing issues. Let's forget about what people will do with this information. We're all human beings. We can choose freely how to use information in a responsible way. Now, let's stop making believe you have to be a psychiatrist to talk to somebody who's deeply disturbed when psychiatrists don't know how. It's so ridiculous. So we're just going to be teaching what we know. What I know. And Pam said, yeah, that's a great idea. I'll do that too. So, you know, Pam is a guy. So she's like, you know, I'd say she's an angel, but I think she's more like what, a queen? I don't know, king. What are you, Pam? You've just come into my life and so empowered what I'm doing in areas that Ginger and I are just not good at.
Well, and it makes me so happy to hear you say that, but I have to tell you, you know, I have, as you know, a very, very great group of people here that do a lot of work, which enables me to really focus on things that make a difference. And I think that one of the reasons why things have worked out so well between us and for us and the things that we're doing is you and I really approach health, all aspects of health the same way, which is consumer empowerment. You know, that's what this is really all about, is people learning that they don't have to be helpless victims, that they don't have to just do what they're told by doctors who sometimes don't have the right ideas about things, and they can take control of their health in meaningful ways, whether it's saying no to a drug or withdrawing from a drug or learning what causes health issues. And so we both have that very important same objective. And I love that we found each other and we can join forces to add mental health to the repertoire of things we were already doing here.
Yes, you found me and you invited me to your program and to do a conference. And I went very skeptically, wondering, you know, what kind of supplement are you selling that's going to cure people's brains? And I got there, and I listened to you talk. I met you. Then I listened to the speakers that you had there. And, folks, it was like being at a cutting-edge reform psychiatry conference where everyone involved had to stand up and speak truth to big industries. People were talking about speaking truth to the dairy industry and the meat industries and the federal government, and Pam had to take on her the committee that's supposed to license nutritionists in her state, and they were going after her because she was speaking the truth. And it was like, oh, wait, I thought it was just me when I started going after psychiatry who got attacked in the ways I've been attacked. Standing up to psychiatry, speaking truth. No, it's speaking truth to any large agglomerations of power. And remember when the meat industry made the mistake of suing Oprah because she spoke negatively of hamburgers on her show? Boy, did they underestimate the power of Oprah. You know, Oprah, by the way, backed me when my license was attacked for remarks I made on her show about psychiatric drugs and freedom of choice. And years ago, she really stood behind me. But then we won. It's like, you know, they even go after Oprah, for God's sakes, the meat industry. So we're really looking at what happens in a modern civilization with, you know, have big industrial complexes. And you know, Pam comes from a similar political position as me in that she really just wants smaller government and more independent choice making, more independent living. I think that's a fair summary, Pam. And we do believe very much in free enterprise. And unlike me, Pam runs a free enterprise that's very successful. You know, I'm a professional, but she's teaching me more about free enterprise. I'm just sort of going here and there. And by the way, I did a deposition this morning, folks, against an electroshock company. I don't want to talk about that. We'll be going to trial soon. But so I'm a little bit bouncy. I think I drank a lot of coffee to get ready deposition. And it only lasted a couple of hours. It's like the poor man got exhausted listening to me talk about how damaging ECT is, the lawyer on the other side. Nice man, though, pleasant man. So, Pam, let me be quiet. You talk about things for a few minutes.
Okay. All right. Well, I know how you feel, though, because sometimes I get really all psyched up to do something that I'm very excited about, and then it's almost like I need a few minutes to just sort of come down off of it before I go into the next thing. So I totally get that.
Yeah, this is my first breather. Is the radio show today?
Yeah, so let me talk a little bit about, maybe it would be helpful for people to know what our objectives are, what we're trying to do here, and what our objectives are for the conference. And our business, our logo and subline are informed medical decision making. And you know, I talk to people about this all the time. People buy things all the time that require, you know, fairly sophisticated knowledge. And they seem to be able to navigate pretty well. A lot of people listening here, they've bought a house or a car or a blender or a washing machine, or they've made a retirement account, or they've chosen a college education for their children. And they do pretty well at these kinds of decisions. And the reason why is that they ask questions and they investigate and they deliberate and they make a decision. And then somehow they end up in a psychiatrist's office or an endocrinologist's office or whichever healthcare professional office they end up in. They just do what they're told. And so I find it interesting that if you talk to people, like I'm 62, you're 83. And
no, wait a minute, I'm 82.
82.
Go ahead.
So, we don't want to rush things along. So you know, you talk to people who've been decades, you know, buying things that are pretty significant and say, well, how do you feel about the things that you bought? And you know what? We all did pretty well. I made some good investments and, you know, I'm pretty happy with my choices. And then I know you hear this and I hear this all the time. People come in to talk about their healthcare situation and they say things like, well, my gosh, if I'd known then what I know now, I never would have done this. I wouldn't have agreed to take this drug. I wouldn't have had this procedure or had this test or something of that nature. So I think that one of the things that I want to really promote, and I promote every opportunity I get, is to just start being a consumer of healthcare and making decisions about your health the way that you make decisions about everything else that's important in your life. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've never met somebody who says, you know, I hate the house I live in, but my realtor told me I had to live here. Nobody says that. And
oh,
I've
God,
never
that's
had
such
anybody
a good analogy.
Says, yeah, and whoever says, you know, and people are so intimidated to speak up about this stuff, but you never hear somebody say, listen, I just don't know much about finances, so I sure hope I can afford this place, but there's no sense in reading the mortgage document. Of course, we all read it. We make sure. So if everybody would just apply the same principles they use in the rest of their life to healthcare decision-making, it's amazing how much better things would turn out. And I get excited about two things in our office here. One is, of course, when people get better. I mean, nobody gets tired of that, right? People calling and saying, I am better, and thank you so much for helping me. But the other thing I get excited about is when I see people making better decisions, and they're so proud of themselves. Sometimes they're as happy to report a discussion with their doctor, and it's not necessarily contentious. It just more goes along the line of, you know, hey, since I was here last, I've learned about my condition. I know why I have high blood pressure, and I've been working to change my health, and I've lost 15 pounds, and I've been keeping a log for 6 weeks now, and here are my blood pressure readings every day, and I'm very careful to take it properly. And as you can see, my blood pressure is dropping. You know something, doctors, you and I have a lot of not-so-nice things to say sometimes about doctors, but when doctors are approached by informed people who are proactive about their health, they often behave entirely differently than they do when they're in the presence of patients who just say, I'm here, I don't know anything, I'm just tell me what to do and I'll do it. So we find that a lot of doctors are actually pretty good when they're approached the right way. So I think that this is the model of healthcare, is patient empowerment, people feeling like, you know, I don't know how to build a house, but I sure have bought a few of them over the years, and I'm pretty happy with them. And I don't know how to build a car, but I've somehow managed to drive them all the time, you know. So let's just make healthcare another consumer decision that's made the same way, and the world would be a better place.
Well, and another part of that is that we think we're in a marketplace when we buy a car or if we buy a house. We have agents sometimes. We go out, we assume we can pick among a plethora, an overload of alternatives. But we think the first doctor or psychiatrist we've seen or therapist, that's it. Like, right. Oh, you go and you stay. And right. It just is, can't possibly be like that, especially when it's such a subtle thing. Say, if you're looking for a counselor or a therapist, somebody to help you with your problems. I mean, that could be as hard as finding a good friend.
But people find good people, you know, by asking around. That's another thing, too, is when you get ready to do something that's kind of important, people will start asking their friends. I do. Like, I just had to have my chimney rebuilt. And so I didn't just, like, get online and the first person that comes up, you know, let's call this guy. It's brickwork, it's expensive, and it has to match the house. And, you know, so I started asking around, hey, you know any good masonry guys? And somebody said, I'll tell you, this guy is amazing. Let me show you a picture of the stuff he did for me. And, you know, so that's how I found the guy who built my chimney. So again, just applying these same principles that we apply to everything. And here's another concept that I talk a lot about, too, is I think that, and this is really important when people start doing research on their own, which is a great idea, but avoid the tendency to just look for somebody else to tell you what to do who you think has better ideas. You know, I even have a slide in my slide set, which you'll see tomorrow night for the public, and it says, you know, coming here and doing what I tell you to do instead of what somebody else told you to do, that's not taking control of your health. I mean, maybe you read one of my books and think I have a pretty good idea about stuff, but that's you still don't know what's going on. You're still putting your health and your future in the hands of somebody else. And so don't look for a guru. I mean, people don't buy houses with real estate gurus. They buy houses with real estate agents and they ask questions. You know, so I think it's you just have to know about this stuff. And the other day somebody said to me, well, you know, it's time consuming to learn this stuff. And I said, I don't want to be disrespectful, but it seems like you're sure spending a lot of time right now dealing with the consequences of not having taken the time to find out about this stuff in the first place. You know? And what price are you paying by not taking the time to find out? And the price that people pay, unfortunately, and you see this as much as I do, is really diminished quality of life because of drugs. And it's not just psych drugs. I mean, we see people in here who are taking 15 other drugs. That's not any better, right? So, anyway, one last thing I'll say that I say all the time when I'm talking in public is when people say about time and money, time that it takes to take care of your health and money you spend taking care of your health, I think all of us between, you know, about the age of 30 and whenever we die, hopefully for me and you it'll be 100 and something, we all spend the same amount of time and money on health. It's a question of what you spend it on. And you and I right now are spending it on exercise and good food and taking great care of ourselves, and other people are spending the money on co-pays for pharmaceutical drugs and that sort of thing. So it's just where you want to put your resources, and putting your resources in the direction of health, it pays dividends that just it's hard to imagine. But my goal is to be like those people in the blue zones who are 107 and taking care of their great 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 grandchildren and working in the fields and being productive at whatever age you are and really enjoying life instead of just existing. That's the goal we should all be working toward.
I think that's just marvelous. You talk so well about empowerment and teaching people what they, you know, how to learn, really, and providing so much scientific information. And it's just astonishing how much there is out there. And I don't know what the larger answer is to organizing a society. You know, if we can somehow come up with a society that really fosters that. And I keep coming back to small government, basically, and giving people more of their own money to make their own decisions and to find their own ways. And we always need a safety net for folks, I'm sure of that. Nobody's going to go back to an age where people don't have some form of the basically charity and help they can get in a world that's so complicated and potentially overwhelming. But we really need a fundamental notion that we're responsible individuals by and large, that the great number of us are responsible individuals who can learn and guide ourselves and get the information we need in an open marketplace. not one closed by the government with big licensure demands and things like that. Just, you know, general thoughts about all of that. Pam, let's take a question, okay?
Yeah, but I want to say something about that first.
Sure, go ahead.
And then take a question. So it's, you're exactly right about that, by the way. Amen to that. And another thing about that, taking a step further, is we need to start understanding our power as voters and citizens. And a very interesting thing just happened in Italy, and I made a video clip about it. This time last year, in 2017, the Italian Parliament, or whatever their legislative body is, passed a law mandating that children had to be vaccinated for 12 diseases or they couldn't go to school. The parents could be fined like $8,300 for not vaccinating, and they could even have your kids taken away if you didn't do it. And so millions, I'm telling you millions, you should see the pictures on the Internet. We're talking about millions of Italians screaming and hollering and demonstrating. And so two political parties decided to make repealing this law their platform. And they basically said there were two, you know, they have more than two parties over there, unlike ours. So these two parties basically said, hey, you vote for us, you get a lot of our guys into the legislative body, and we'll get rid of this thing for you. And they won by overwhelming margins, both of them, both parties, lots of people. And just a couple, 3 weeks ago, the Italian Senate voted to repeal this law. So what happened was millions of Italians said, we've had it up to here, we're not going to take it, you're going to fix this. A political party saw this huge number of people and said, this is a way for us to have a platform to run on. And then when they got elected, they saw loud and clear, if we don't do this, then guess what happens the next election? They'll get rid of us, like they got rid of the people who did it, right? So they hurried up and passed it. And so I think if voters would get energized, and I tell people this in California all the time on the vaccination issue, the people in California who are all upset about that mandatory vaccine law, you could get rid of every single person who introduced and voted for that law in one election if you'd all get together and just go do it and take out the governor while you're at it. So power to the people. We have got to stop laying down and just taking this stuff. We've got to get organized, like you said, and everybody's got to take responsibility for getting out there and telling people, I'm not taking it anymore. You will change this or you're gone. And that's the politicians work at our behest. And we should keep that in mind. So, anyway, now we can take a caller. I just felt I had to put that in.
Well, I want to go on with this for a minute. Pam, you know so much more about vaccination than I do. You really studied it. And you've brought it up, and it's a loaded topic. So I want you to continue and talk about that a bit.
Well,
what's your scientific understanding of the risks and the benefits of giving multiple vaccinations to our infants in particular?
Well, we start with a baby that's 2 hours old, give it a hepatitis B vaccine, and I guess that must have been that at one point in time there was a lot of problem with sexual promiscuity and needle sharing in the nursery. I mean, I don't know why else you'd give a little baby a hepatitis B vaccine. This is insane. But the children get 57 doses of vaccine before they go to school. And here's something, this is probably the best thing that I can share with listeners about the situation, and I think it's a macro thing that explains all the rest of it, but about 30 years ago, I think it was, maybe a little bit longer, the federal government entered into an agreement with the vaccine makers to hold them harmless for the damage that their products do. So they can't be sued no matter how many people they hurt or kill. And so they created a tax on each vaccine that goes into a fund. And this, nobody knows about this court or the fund or whatever, but a court that nobody knows about, virtually nobody knows about, with a statute of limitations that is the shortest for any court in the country, has paid out $3.4 billion in claims since it was set up. That's a lot of money for a problem everybody says doesn't exist, right? But here's the thing that I think might help clarify this. What if the federal government made a deal with the car makers? They said, you know what? We don't think that we should have any safety standards anymore. So we're just not going to have any. The car makers can make safe cars. We're pretty confident in them. What we will do is we'll collect a tax of $250 on every car that gets sold, and we'll put it into a fund. And so if your car kills somebody or a car kills one of your family members or whatever, you just file a lawsuit in this court of claims, and they'll give you some money for your injured or disabled or dead family member, right? People would stop buying cars. I don't know anybody in their right mind who would buy a car in the United States under those circumstances. And that's essentially what has happened. And until we get that straightened out and these drug companies have actual liability, we have a big problem. And this is why the vaccine schedule keeps increasing, because if you're Merck or Pfizer or Purdue Pharma, and you're looking at what are you going to develop this year, you're going to develop another drug that a Peter Bragan can be an expert witness and make you pay for your mistake, or are you going to develop a vaccine? Doesn't matter how many people you hurt or kill, it stays on the market and you're exempt from any liability. It's a ridiculous situation that never should have occurred, and shame on our government for getting into this situation. But when people ask me about vaccines, I tell them, let's start with that. And if that doesn't make you really upset about the situation and thinking it needs changing, we can certainly go into the details on some of the rest of it, like fetal aborted tissue lines, tissue cells in the as an adjuvant and aluminum. And if you saw the adjuvants in these vaccines, it would just make you cringe. And then one last thing, and I promise I'll stop talking, but I find it really ironic that so many people who are pro-choice in terms of abortion aren't pro-choice about vaccination. So basically what they're saying, and I think it's incredibly hypocritical, is you get to be pro-choice on things that I say you can be pro-choice on. And that's not the way things should work, all right? You don't get to tell me what I get to choose. But actually in America right now, that is the way it is. So now I'll be quiet.
Yeah, I've looked at some scientific articles that have summarized the kinds of payments that have been made from the almost secret vaccine court, and they fit with a lot of neurological injury too.
Yes.
And there's just all over the place is neurological injuries, and that's probably where the autism thing got started, because if you neurologically injure an infant, it can look like autism, but it's actually not autism, it's a neurological injury. Whereas I believe autism is a psychosocial developmental issue of bonding, and from my experience and my study over these decades. But what's happening is neurological injuries, where you can actually, you know, see the neurologic system not functioning properly. Now, there are no studies of, I'm sure, of giving 57 vaccines to children and infants and seeing the outcome. I mean, those kind of studies aren't going to be done. The vaccines are going to be tested to whatever degree they're tested on individually, you know, as if the child hasn't had their immune system stimulated by 56 other vaccines. So it's a really complicated issue, folks, and should not be dismissed as a conspiracy issue. I think that the way that Pam is raising it is very, very solid. And you know, the head of HUD, the marvelous neurosurgeon, he's retired now, obviously, from Baltimore. I'm just blocking on his name, as I often do. You know, he, the African-American neurosurgeon, did a lot of surgery on remarkable surgeries on infants. But, you know, he said publicly, well, you know, we're giving so many. Certainly, do we really need to give so many and so soon? So these are not just conspiracy type theories.
Well, they're, when you really start looking into it, it even gets darker, because the vaccines don't work. I mean, in communist China, they force vaccinate. I mean, it's a military thing. They take military action against you if you don't vaccinate. So there are counties and provinces in China where the vaccination rate is 99.9%. They still have outbreaks of these diseases because the vaccines don't work. You look at things like tetanus. I wrote a 5-page paper on tetanus. The tetanus rate of the infection rate from tetanus started falling in the United States in 1847. So the tetanus vaccine is a vaccine looking for something to be useful for. It certainly wasn't because the infection rate from tetanus was hurting a lot of people. So the whole thing is just the whole deal is a criminal enterprise, and I don't use terms like that lightly. But as if what I've said is not enough, and what you've said is not enough, you know, the federal government passed, our Congress, hard at work, the ones that made the deal with the vaccine companies, did another just unbelievable thing, and that was the PDUFA Act, the Prescription Drug User Fee, whatever. But anyway, what this is the drug companies pay the FDA to have their products reviewed. Now, think about this arrangement for a minute. And this year, the payment is going to reach almost $900 million, okay, almost $1 billion. And so last year, the approval rate, or 2016 rather, the approval rate for new drugs was 96%. 96%. Here's what I want to see. I want to see the 4% they didn't approve. It must be like intravenous arsenic or something. I mean, I can't imagine what it would be. And I have to imagine that outside of the meeting room, a couple of FDA officials were reassuring whichever drug company brought it to the table, listen, we got to look like we're paying attention here, so we chose this one to turn down, but submit it next year, and we got you covered, right? I mean, seriously, in what universe do you let people who you're regulating finance your agency? This is insane. So when we talk about these vaccines and being tested for safety, nothing's being tested for safety. Everything is tested, and you know this from the psych drugs, it's tested in some 6-week or 10-week or 12-week clinical trial, and if things don't look so good by 6 or 8 weeks, they change the endpoint, which shouldn't be allowed, and or they do data mining, find something to talk about that makes it look like the drug is effective for somebody. And all it has to be is statistically significant. It doesn't have to be clinically meaningful to the patient at all. And they get their way with the FDA. And drug after drug after test after test after device after device, it's the same thing. The devices, they don't even have to apply for approval. All they have to do is show that it's kind of sort of like something else they already approved. I mean, kind of sort of is not an exaggeration. And you get an approval, you don't even have to submit anything.
You know, right now with the suit against one of the two shot companies, it turns out that for years the shot companies have not been submitting any reports to the FDA on memory loss or anything from patients. They say whatever they say. I don't want to get into the legal entanglements, but they just haven't been sending in reports. And when I tried to get whatever reports had been sent in, the FDA, unlike its usual cooperativeness around getting drug information, when it came to the electroshock machines, the FDA couldn't figure out where I should make the request. And when they finally figured it out, and I finally figured it out, I got a note saying, well, it could take 18 months or whatever. So,
they're famous for that.
But, you know, I think that something is going on with these shock machines that is way beyond what even usually goes on. Because, I've found the FDA generally very cooperative in terms of, maybe it'll end with this radio show, but I've found them generally very cooperative in getting me the legitimate materials that I request for various purposes. But here the FDA is basically allowing people around the country, hundreds of thousands probably, to get their brain shot so that they go into a convulsion and a coma and come out with worse than an NFL concussion. And then instead of saying, well, you got to take 6 months off, you've got a concussion, or at least miss a few days, they give them another concussion every other day. And the FDA hasn't found the guts or the meaningfulness or the honor to actually insist on testing the machines. And of course, the AMA and the APA, psychiatric and medical people, they don't want the machines tested. They just want to use them. It's bizarre.
Right. Well, and here's another issue too, and I've been talking about this for years. You have an institutional conflict at the FDA that can never be resolved. Even if you got rid of all the drug money and the agency was set up right, you still should divide it into two agencies. It should be an FDA Department A that actually approves the drugs, and then another building 16 blocks away staffed with different people who answer to somebody else who does post-market regulation. Because the problem you have is, even if this was all done the right way, and it's not, you're still in a situation where the agency has to admit, we made a mistake, we shouldn't have approved this. And they always struggle to take anything off the market, even when it is well proven that it's hurting people. So the first thing is, we got to get the corruption and the money out of the deal. And by the way, they're not the only ones. The Centers for Disease Control has a foundation. They take money from all the drug companies. The National Institutes of Health has a foundation, and they take money from all the manufacturers. The NIH, this way to hear this, the NIH was getting ready to do a a study on the benefits of drinking alcohol every day. Now, I'm sure you'll be shocked at this, financed by, you guessed it, the liquor makers in the United States. And they even had emails back and forth about how they're going to structure it to make sure that daily drinking looks like it's beneficial. We're pretty sure we can deliver the result that you're looking for in the whole nine yards. And the liquor companies and winemakers and everybody had ponied up $65 million to do this rigged trial. And then the New York Times broke the story. So they gave the money back, and they said it was all misunderstood. I love when the emails say clearly these things. They go, oh, it was a big misunderstanding. Well, I'm pretty smart, actually. And so when the email says, we're pretty sure we can deliver the result that you want, here's what I think that means. We can deliver the result that you want. That's what I think that means, right? I don't think I misunderstood, and I don't think that we don't understand this whole thing. So it's just the whole thing, the whole system is so corrupt. And the only thing that's ever going to change this, it's back to what I said about the Senate in Italy. It's when everybody in this country decides, we're mad as heck, we're not going to take it anymore, and we're getting rid of all of them. And I mean, I vote based on the way people handle these kinds of issues. My Ohio State representative and senator know, if you don't vote on these issues, I'm not voting for you. And if everybody made that clear, and I'll tell you a great success story here in the United States about this that we could all stand to be inspired by. In case the Italian Senate thing didn't do it for you, you know, there was a period of time when the FDA, one of the most misbehaving agencies in the world, was terrorizing doctors who were doing like vitamin C injections and selling supplements, and they were raiding various doctors' offices, and they all sooner or later get law enforcement involved. And so with alcohol, firearms, and tobacco agents, they went into Jonathan Wright's office, medical doctor in Tacoma, Washington, because he was doing vitamin C injections and the whole nine yards. And so it was a very public thing because he has a big mouth, thankfully. He got himself on the Larry King Show, and this was before the GoFundMe organizations. People sent him, this was like in the late 80s, sent him $250,000 for legal fees. He never got charged with anything. But this was sort of like the pinnacle of what had been building as the FDA continued to misbehave. And just, I mean, in what universe do you take people with machine guns into a doctor's office? I mean, seriously, this is overkill, right? So anyway, Orrin Hatch comes from Utah. He's from a state where there are a lot of supplement companies. And he introduced a law that was very unpopular, and it passed by overwhelming margins. It was the Deshaies Act of 1994, which basically took the FDA's regulatory authority over dietary supplements away. Now, we could talk about in some ways that's not a good idea, but the point is that the people in Congress, members of Congress, reported that they got more letters in favor of Deshaies than they got in opposition to the Vietnam War. All right, so they, wow. And some people said they would come to their office, they couldn't even see their desk from the mail. You, by the way, if you're going to mail your talk to your congressman or whoever, send paper mail. You have to make it so that they can't navigate the hallways with the bags of mail. That's the only thing they see, that they don't see email. They sat in their offices where they'll say, are we getting a lot of emails on this? And the staffer will say, yeah, we're getting a few. Well, a few could mean 29,000 or it could mean three, right? So anyway, my point in all of this is that this is sort of an American story like the Italian one. Millions and millions and millions of Americans, and the independent health food stores got involved. They were passing out flyers to everybody. And those people in Washington knew one thing very crystal clear, because they all want to stay in office until they're 190 years old, right? If I don't vote for this law, they're going to toss me out, so I better vote for it. And that's the way it should be. And we could do this again. We could do this again, but we just have to get organized. I mean, that's what we're doing here. We're building a coalition of members who we hope that we can get it to, you know, 25, 30 million people, and then we can probably make some people extremely nervous about what we'll do to them. And I'm not talking about violence and setting fire to things. I'm talking about voting people out of office. And they're far more afraid to be voted out of office than they are setting fire to things. They'd prefer we burn a building down rather than vote them out of office. So when you start talking about getting rid of them, they really do hate that more than anything.
We've probably only got about 3 minutes left. And by the way, thank you for calling in. And one of my wonderful callers today is really more a guest than a caller by now, and I just want to say that I just get so wound up with Pam that I think that that's just wonderful to just be talking together about all this stuff. Do you want us to say a word about how they went after you, Pam, and what you did about it? I should tell more of the stories about what's happened when people have gone after me, there's that story about what happened with the state committee that went after you, just very briefly.
Here's the very, very short version. I was back in the day just starting my business, really, and the Ohio Board of Dietetics came after me for practicing dietetics without a license. I'm not practicing dietetics. If you know much about dietetics, we don't teach people how to eat dairy for strong bones and all that. But anyway, it turned into a long debacle. And one of the messages, I think, about something that like what happened to me is that these agencies get crazier and crazier, and then sooner or later they pick on the wrong person. That's definitely the mistake they made with me. And I fought back, and I spent an enormous tens of thousands of dollars, and we entered into what turned out to be a 5-year battle, after which I said I'm going to do something about this. And I started working on changing rules and regulations in Ohio with some success, and I also got involved on the national scene and working on laws in 17 different states pertaining to this issue. But by the time they found me, one little interesting thing, I got a hold of the Colorado Sunrise Commission report, and they have an interesting process in Colorado. If you're thinking of introducing a bill, they have an agency that determines whether or not the bill is needed or not, and then you can't introduce it if there's no need. So Colorado's never had a dietetics board, and they did an analysis of dietetics boards all over the United States, and the Ohio Board of Dietetics had gone after more people than all other states combined. And they had taken action against more people than all other states combined. I mean, this is the busiest group of people you've ever seen over ridiculous stuff. I mean, at one point in time, they were telling a group of legislators, you know, I was doing all kinds of illegal things, like teaching a class called Fun with Soy. Now, you know what kind of trouble you can get into. Do you know how people can be hurt if you start talking about soy foods publicly? I mean, you just don't know what bad things can happen from that. And one of their investigators actually told me that if I showed the film Diet for a New America, it would be considered the unlicensed practice of dietetics. And that's when I told her. I said, well, I'll tell you how we're going to figure this out. We're going to go at it, and if the United States Supreme Court says that I cannot show that film, I'll stop. But until then, we have a profound disagreement about the way that life should be conducted.
Pam Popper, I love you.
Love you, too.
You inspire me. You empower me, and I hope I do some of that for you.
Yes, you do, and
folks,
I'll see you tomorrow.
Her phone number. Let me give you a phone number. Go, you give your phone number.
All right, it's 614-841-7700.
And it's Pam Popper at
MSN.com. It's MSN.com.
Pam Popper at MSN.com. She'll actually respond to you about the upcoming weekend where I'll be teaching in front of audiences and filming in Columbus. She'll tell you about the upcoming conference in November that I'm co-sponsoring starting November 8th. She'll tell you about new courses in January and existing courses that I'm involved in. So it's an amazing resource for you. And thank you for being there, everyone. Thank you. And bye-bye, Pam.
Bye.